morning. My name is Michael McCusker. Today's program is essentially a revised revision of an earlier program about America's non-ecclesiastical Ten Commandments, the American Bill of Rights. Our revolutionary ancestors followed their successful abolition of royal subjugation of English colonial rule with a radical constitution preceded with a controversial set of afterthoughts, which immediately became the foundation stone of American democracy, the Bill of Rights. But there was a provocative prelude provided by the abolished mother country. 335 years ago, on December 16, 1689, the English Parliament adopted a Bill of Rights that proclaimed that all English citizens possessed certain inviolable civil and political rights, and which also cataloged the conditions for prospective kings or queens for ascending the throne. Exactly a century later, plus 3 years, American revolutionaries followed their successful abolition of king and crown with their own Bill of Rights on December 15, 1791. And 5 days earlier, 157 years afterward, on December 10, 1948, 3 years after the end of history's worst war, the fledgling United Nations adopted the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, chaired by Eleanor Roosevelt. While the American Bill of Rights are the fundamental laws of the United States, the UN Declaration of Human Rights act more aspirational for humanity in general, but not its reality quite yet. Among the most essential provisions of these two documents are: all humans are born free and equal in dignity and rights. They are endowed with reason and conscience and should act toward one another in a spirit of humanhood. United Nations Article 1. Everyone is entitled to all rights and freedoms without distinction of any kind, such as race, color, sex, language, religion, political or other opinion, national or social origin, property, birth, or other status. United Nations Article Number 2. No law shall be made respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free expression thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press, or the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition for a redress of grievance. United States First Amendment to its Constitution. Everyone has the right to freedom of thought, conscience, and religion. This right includes freedom to change religion or belief, either alone or in community with others, and to hold opinions without interference, and to seek, receive, and impart information and ideas through any media and regardless of frontiers. UN Article 18 and 19. Everyone has the right to life, liberty, and security of person. UN Article 3. The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable search shall not be violated. U.S. Fourth Amendment. No one shall be held in slavery or servitude. Slavery and the slave trade shall be prohibited in all their forms. UN Article 4. Everyone has the right to work, to free choice of employment, to just and favorable conditions of work, and to protect against unemployment. Everyone, without any discrimination, has the right to equal pay for equal work. UN Article 23. No person shall be held to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime unless on a presentment or indictment of a grand grand jury of peers, nor shall be compelled in any criminal case to be a witness against themselves, nor be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. U.S. Fifth Amendment. No one shall be subjected to torture or to cruel, inhuman, or degrading treatment or punishment. UN Article 5. Everyone has the right to recognition everywhere as a person before the law. UN Article 6. No law shall be passed granting to any citizen or class of citizens privileges or immunities which upon the same terms shall not be equally belong to all citizens. And that's the Oregon State Constitution, Bill of Rights. Some of you who are listening might notice that these articles and amendments have been somewhat scrambled between the U.S. Bill of Rights and the U.N. Declaration of Human Rights. And the last provision from the Oregon State Constitution of Bill of Rights seems pertinent. And the 14th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution is the due process and equal protection, quote-unquote, glue that binds universal and national human rights together. Section 1. All persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States and the state wherein they reside. No state shall make or enforce any law which shall abridge the privileges or immunities of citizens of the United States, nor shall any state deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor deny to any person within its jurisdiction the protection of the laws. And Section 5 of Article 14. The Congress shall have the power to enforce appropriate legislation, the provisions of this article, quote unquote. The Due Process Clause of the 14th Amendment has been the force for applying nearly all of the specific guarantees of the first 10 amendments, our beloved Bill of Rights. Former and future President Donald Trump hit a brick wall with the 14th Amendment when he attempted to disclaim birthright citizenship despite his threats and bluster of executive privilege, and he intends to do that again. Listeners might also notice that in neither documents, articles, or amendments mentioned is a provision for equal rights between women and men. The U.S. Bill of Rights neglects gender equality, and the closest the U.N. Human Rights Declaration gets is Article 16, in which both genders, quote, of full age, unquote, have a right to marry, quote, without any limitation due to race, nationality, or religion, and are, quote, entitled to equal rights as to marriage, during marriage and at its dissolution. This article ignores same-sex marriage, which is at least finally recognized in the USA, but remains bitterly opposed by the deposed president and future president and the disaffected Republican Party, both of which openly despise democracy. An Equal Rights Amendment, which is equality of rights under the law, shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state on account of sex, to the Constitution, has failed at least twice and seems dead before arrival for the indeterminate future, especially while women's constitutional rights to abortion are under mortal assault by the aforementioned Republican democracy oppositionists. This pernicious denial of human rights to women and that their half of the human race is unequal and subordinate to the male half is a persistent malignancy. It has been chronic throughout history, especially when muscle and force have brutally and insensitively held intelligence and sensitivity in thrall, despite every declaration of liberty and justice. The final analysis is that human rights, like everything else, reverberate throughout humanity's entire history, the ancient yin and yang of either ruthlessly accumulating power and privilege for the few or establishing and extending rights and liberties to all humanity. Democracy works only and at any and every level if the people involved and impacted participate in the necessary choices. Otherwise, our single option is to obey because we have disenfranchised ourselves. And now, by Rahm Emanuel, for the New York Times, The Road Back to Power for Democrats. It begins with messengers and messages that meet the moment. And he is the U.S. Ambassador to Japan. Campaigns of joy in an era of rage do not win elections. When Donald Trump declared, "I am your warrior, I am your justice, and for those who have been wronged and betrayed, I am your retribution," he was channeling a nation's fury. The online cheerleading for the killer of a healthcare insurance CEO in New York City is just more evidence of this seething populist anger. In contrast, the Democratic Party has been blind to the rising sea of disillusionment. In today's America, aspiration and ambition have been supplanted by anger and animosity. Talk about missing the moment. This groundswell of resentment had been simmering for years. Trump just seized on it. So we shouldn't be surprised that he also drew support from large numbers of Democrats' own coalition of the ascendant, quote-unquote, minorities, young urbanites, and women so successfully mobilized by President Barack Obama. From 2020 to 2024, Trump doubled his share of the black vote to 16%, while the Latino vote rose from 35% to 43%. To many voters, the nation's elite has overseen a system that is rigged in favor of the powerful. And for the first time in American history, there is a generation of voters who believe that their children will not be better off than them. The disenchantment started in 2003 with the Iraq War, dubbed a disaster by Vice President-elect J.D. Vance. Sold on deceit and deception, with thousands of Americans dead, damaged, and disfigured, the conflict was perpetrated by people who now sit on corporate boards and hold chairs at prestigious universities. So much for justice. A handful of years later, liar loans, quote-unquote, and unchecked greed led to the collapse of the global financial system, with homes and small businesses lost and livelihoods destroyed. Not only was no one held accountable, but the same bankers who engineered the crisis were aggrieved at the suggestion of diminished bonuses and government intervention. It was a mistake not to apply Old Testament justice to the bankers during the Obama administration, as some called at the time. Why should an American electorate put its faith in the same establishment that had overseen two calamitous events, with those responsible giving off scot-free? The bonds of trust between the establishment and the public had been severed, and too many in our party failed to appreciate it. In fact, during the pandemic, Democrats abandoned their anti-establishment credentials and enthusiastically morphed into the establishment. In "Following the Science," and that's a quote, we shuttered schools and the economy. Meanwhile, our language and priorities have reinforced the aloof elite stereotype. With inflation stinging, school absenteeism skyrocketing, and students' academic scores plummeting, Democrats consumed themselves in debates over pronouns, bathroom access, and renaming schools, and adopted terms such as care economy and Latinx to win over voters. It was a hermetically sealed conversation with ourselves, and we appeared much as we sounded, distant and detached. Trump, on the other hand, captured the underlying zeitgeist. Rather than using his messaging against the Kamala Harris of 2024, he depicted her as the senator of the 2020 primaries, whose positions left her looking out of touch. Sure, his unfiltered words were crude and often derogatory, but they reflected people's feelings of abandonment. Democrats have been here before. The road back out of the wilderness begins with messengers and messages that meet the moment. Far from draining the swamp, Trump and his administration will soon be bathing in it. We need to reveal the populist Trump as a plutocrat. The hypocrisy will be there in the upcoming tax legislation and slashed regulations for the powerful, all paid for by the middle class. With everyone from big oil to big pharma lining up for their share of the spoils, we will need to be strategic in how we chip away Trump's populist veneer. By returning to our roots as the voice of the middle class, we can unite both moderates and progressives in a fight against the well-heeled and well-connected. Second, we can no longer tiptoe around the issues that have people worried: crime, immigration, homelessness, and the fentanyl crisis are, understandably, on the minds of millions. When carjackings are up and everything in pharmacies is locked down, you can't recite crime statistics to deny people's everyday experiences. Americans want to see respect for the laws that govern our borders and to live in communities that are safe and secure. That shouldn't be hard to appreciate. People prefer order over disorder. Trump was successful on these issues because his words tapped the public's frustration. Ours communicated permissiveness. Third, if Democrats are to be relevant again, finding and supporting the right candidates for the 2026 midterm elections will be critical. In 2006, 2008, 2018, we recruited candidates whose biographies conveyed authenticity. They were war veterans, sheriffs, small business owners, and former football players. Crucially, they were not career politicians. The strategy worked again last month, with Democrats flipping 6 House seats in New York and California. Candidates such as Derek Tron, a son of Vietnamese refugees and an Army veteran, and aerospace executive George Whiteside, have credentials that lent them legitimacy and receptivity among swing voters. The personal is political. November was a jarring reminder that misjudging the mood of a nation can be catastrophic. If Democrats are to make the most of the next election, they must ready their message and messengers, abandon failed orthodoxies, and embrace strategies with a record of delivering seats, success, and real prosperity. And that was The Road Back to Power for Democrats by Rahm Emanuel, who was ambassador to Japan. And this was written for the New York Times. This is Michael McCusker. Joanne Rideout is engineer of this program. Donald Trump, with a capital T for tyrant, will most likely attempt a fumbling Roman desiccation of democracy, which he failed to accomplish his first term as president, essentially defeated by a deadly virus he was incapable of contesting. There seemed to be enough Americans whose votes returned him to the presidency who do not quite grasp democracy, which is always on the cusp of arrogant despotism from within, and which will be on full display these next 4 years. Happy joys of the season.
You've been listening to A Story Told on KMUN, featuring Michael McCusker, journalist, activist, former firefighter, and Vietnam veteran. Michael has been sharing essays and poetry on A Story Told since 1987. For 30 years, he published the North Coast Times-Eagle newspaper out of his home in Astoria, Oregon. Michael currently shares his work and the works of other authors from his home on the Central Oregon coast. Join us here next week for A Story Told.